My name is Brian Levine, and my financial disclosure is that I am a contractor for SAIC at the CDC with the National Center for Public Health Informatics, NICFI. And I have been with SAIC for 12 years, and about 8 or 9 of those years have been spent integrating laboratory systems at various places. Before I started working at the CDC in 2002, I was working with the National Cancer Institute and the National Center for Bioinformatics. I have also done some consulting work with the FDA, and I've helped out here and there in different capacities. But I started at the CDC evaluating different laboratory information management systems to determine which would be the best for the CDC to implement. And one of our major requirements was that the systems would be integratable. That was the beginning of our trek. I'm the project manager of a program called STARS, which is the Specimen Tracking and Results Reporting System, and a project called LUNA, which is the Laboratory Unified Network Application. Those projects started in 2002. We're rolling, we have users today in 2009. And my talk is going to be about some of the challenges that we've faced, both from a technology standpoint and from a business standpoint. My background from an education standpoint is I have an MBA, and I also have a Bachelor's of Science in Computer Science. So I'm going to approach this both from a technical side and from a business side, relating back to some of the lessons learned in integrating laboratory information. This mouse, that mouse. All right, so the problem, and there should have been another bullet that just said insert your problem here, because the problem is whatever problem you're trying to solve. And in the earlier presentation, that problem may have been justification for integration of systems. So let's assume that that has been achieved and you've justified. Then what are you looking at? What are your challenges and obstacles moving forward? These are some of the things we faced back in 2002, and then again 2003, 4, 5, 6, and you can keep on looking at, and it seems to be the problems we continue to encounter and they continue to face. Number one is just the number of stovepipe systems in public health. And I think the root of that is because of the number of different focuses there are in public health. I went to my first APHL conference in 2002, and somebody got up there and said, if you've seen one public health lab, then you've seen one public health lab. So the systems are pretty much the same. We've seen a lot of systems that come out of need, that come out of events, that come out of the news, that are put together very specifically for a specific need or an event, and they're not built originally to integrate. I include within our systems Excel spreadsheets, Access databases, and paper systems. So there are hundreds, there could be even more than that. You speak to many states, and many have created their own tools. Within the CDC, many organizations and labs have created their own tools. So we're dealing with hundreds and hundreds of systems that have very similar data. There's also several standards, and most people will tell you that the standards, not that they don't apply to them, but they're not really applicable, or there's something missing, or it doesn't map exactly right. So you may have LOINC, you may have SNOMED, you may have HL7, you may have these things, but it doesn't necessarily help in the integration. Vocabulary has not been normalized, and that statement is hopefully becoming less and less emphasized, less and less bold, because we are seeing over the last couple of years an effort within public health to come up with these catalogs of tests to work on the vocabulary. But when we started our trek, vocabulary not being normalized, which means you may have the same test as that lab and you call it something different. You may have the same type of tube, you call it something different. You may have the same, you may be just referring to male, female different. One calls it gender and one calls it sex. That vocabulary needs to be mapped and normalized. And lack of common data elements. If we're all talking about a test, or all talking about specimen, or all talking about patients, that's great. But my patient record may be broken down into all these demographics and information about the physiology of the patient or what have you, and somebody else's patient's model will do that differently. So if you take something as simple as a, looking around me, I was going to say a pencil, but I don't have one. So we'll use a badge. My object, the way I've modeled it, my badge has a lanyard string, a little plastic thing, and an insert. But somebody else may have been more descriptive and talked about the different inserts and mentioned the metal clip and the round thing. So we're dealing with, yes, I call it a specimen. Yes, you call it a specimen. Why can't we just talk together? And we're learning about some of those challenges. And multiple point of contacts for all these systems. So it would be great if there was some system owner, and now I'm talking about people, not systems, but some person out there that owns all these systems, and you just have to talk with that one person. But instead, we're talking about, for those hundreds of systems, we're talking about hundreds of system owners. And legacy systems that are unable to utilize some of the newer technologies. So we have all these great things at our disposal, web services and service-oriented architecture, and how do we then bring in some of the older legacy system? And then you have duplication of functionality. So because a lot of the systems were created without the notion of a enterprise in mind, everyone has a system for logging in. Everyone has a system for notification. Everyone has a system for... So you have all of these what I call supporter systems that each system have to recreate and have done it in a different way. Wrong mouse again. So when I look at integration of disparate systems, and for me, disparate can be geographic or can be just different technology or even different types of systems. So disparate is disparate. I identify two things that we normally look at. And one is the mechanism to communicate. The other is the language that is spoken once you achieve that communication. So we'll look at the analogy of verbal speech. I can communicate to you via a cell phone, a landline, Skype, a microphone, yelling really loud, two cups connected to each other. Whatever it is, that is the mechanism. And often, that is the easy part because somebody has done it before and there's a pick list of things that we can choose and each one has its benefits and it's really easy to say, I want to do that. But normally, when people are coming up with budgets and a project plan for integration, that is what they're focusing on, this mechanism. And looking and say, oh, we could implement that in X amount of months or X amount of years. The language that is spoken, that becomes really key because with human beings, put two people together, let's say they speak different languages, you may have that barrier. But we come to an understanding that regardless of where we grew up, regardless of our geographic location, regardless of the accent that we might have, if we're speaking the same language, we're both speaking English, then we're going to pretty much understand 90, 95% of what's happening over the telephone. When we put computers together, the lack of common data models, the lack of a data dictionary that tells you what these things mean, the lack of the data mapping and the lack of the synchronization, it's as if we were speaking two different languages. So it's not as simple as saying we're both using HL7 or we're both using XML, so it becomes that there's another piece there. And that piece is a business piece. It's a SME domain piece. And you can't necessarily hand it off to your contractors and developers and say, okay, solve this problem as well. We need you to map all this data together. Wrong mouse again. We'll see how many times I click before I realize the mouse is down there. So here's some integration mechanisms. And it's not all inclusive, but it's just several of the things that people use to share information that has facilitated integration among systems. And some of the new ones are off to the right, grid, cloud computing, service buses. Those are the new buzzwords, at least in the last 2 years, the things that are getting a lot of attention. Some of the older ways, the database staging tables, some of the data brokers and things like that. And even older, you have some of your FTP and stuff like that. So I'm just throwing them out there to add to what I said about, I did it again, integration mechanisms. But vocabulary, you know, we said not everyone uses the same standards. And if so, they may use it different or identify gaps. And when the standards are in use, the mapping exercise is difficult. And a lot of effort has been done, you know, recently to handle that. But then how do you handle versioning? Excuse me. So versioning. So let's say today we have this great test catalog, or next week or next year we do a little bit better on mapping the results. Well, you're going to have information in your system that isn't just from this year and next year. You're going to have that last year and the year before and the year before and all your legacy data. So it's not just important to map the data for everything moving forward, but then how do you move backwards? And one way we do that is by having a system that manages versioning. Because when did that standard come out? When was that mapped is important. And to what system and what date was that? Did that happen? One of the things often overlooked are, well, it's kind of easy to say, here are those standards, let's figure out how we map to them. What about those things that don't have standards? And one of the things we talk about in public health are questions. When did you last leave the country? There is no LOIN code for that. You know, when did you last interact with someone who had swine flu or H1N1? You know, when did you, those type of questions that are asked in the field that are recorded as part of these laboratory systems and case management systems, we have to also work on a way to do that, because when we look at data from an IT perspective and try and normalize that data, we'll go in and we'll see one system says, you know, what is the gender of the patient? And another one will say, what is the sex? The other one will say male/female. And there could be 15 different ways to ask that same question. So how do we come up with these standard questions? And some of the answers as well. So we started our project right around anthrax scare 2002. And one of the things we were looking at is that you can describe a floor on a building about 1,000 different ways. How do you map that out so it's the same table in all of that, those systems that are referring to the same table? So there's also this tendency to force adherence to standards when standards don't exist or don't meet your needs. And we've seen a lot of that as well, where it's not perfect, it's not right, but by golly, we have to link it up with something. So that can cause problems as well. We've actually seen areas where what people put into the field. So even if there was some mapping exercise of a field called animal classification, and a certain lab doesn't do any testing on animals, but they really need a field for some other type of thing. We've seen where that field was used because in their lab, that's just how they do it. So now you're even working through some other challenges. So the other thing is, in applications today, when you're looking at long lists of things, the common way to display those is in a pull-down list, you know, one of those drop-down boxes. Though our vocabulary and our standard systems tend to be polyhierarchical, more of a tree type thing, where you drill down to this level and then you might have these choices and things like that. So one of our other challenges is how do we display vocabulary in that type of environment? I didn't click it this time. So I'll talk about some solutions, and this is my key here. If I say a solution, I'm referring to a project that we've done and why that was successful. And if I say the solution, so it's going to jump back and forth between certain slides that say the or a. So a is I'm referring to something we've done, and I'll try to tell you which project that was. So the solution, and again, there should be a bullet here that says insert your solution here, because it's not a fully comprehensive list, but more of a kind of a direction and guideline of moving forward. The first is to understand or develop your enterprise architecture, to not have an idea of the more global integration, would be detrimental, because often I've seen systems be developed that contradict an organization's enterprise architecture goals, or recreated things that were already in place. Because whether you're integrating shipment information, test order information, patient information, we have to go back and say, what is the general mechanism for integration, and does that already exist, and are there standards? And especially the security piece becomes one of those gotchas. I should have even mentioned in the problem statement that I've seen a lot of applications get this far and be totally functional and then realize that they've missed the boat on some of the security concerns, and then have to go back and figure, okay, how do we address that? So knowing that enterprise architecture, you know, becomes important. Agreement on an integration mechanism. I've also seen the, if you build it, they will come, and then you've developed something that is so cool, but yet so complex, and those that are integrating with you did not agree on how that would happen, and then you end up creating adapters, very common in the kind of data broker, integration broker, are those adapters, you know, creating adapters so that others can do whatever they want, you can do whatever you want, and you're still speaking. So if you can come to a common ground, that definitely helps. Identifying common data elements, it's probably one of the most tedious, because for most, you can't assign it to a contractor or somebody else. It very much takes that SME, and it very much takes people's time and getting those organizations together. It can't be done in a vacuum. So I've seen successful implementations of that. You know, I've done some work with, like I mentioned, the National Cancer Institute, and they have a very successful kind of central board for common data elements. So if you need anything new in your application, you have to go through that central board. Create a vocabulary system. Vocabulary is more complex than we think. We get to versioning, coded elements. Which system did it come from? What are the synonyms for that? Because very much in the display, we may wish to display fields in a certain way that are common to people, but we may want to link them in the background to standards that would confuse the heck out of anyone trying to use the interface. So that becomes, you know, very important. Identify common reusable services. What are those services that we can reuse regardless of the functionality? Because often that's what we can start working on when we're trying to figure out the common data elements vocabulary. We can be working on some of these reusable services. And develop a web user interface. A lot of people thought, and this is one that I'll show an example of, that if it's true web services, true services-oriented architecture, everything's talking to each other, why do you need a web user interface that kind of you would hand enter, and it seems archaic, and I'll get into that as well. And then what are some of the support services? Oh, there we go. So this is a architecture of the project that I've been working on, the specimen tracking and results reporting system, and it's a little small. But I'll point out a couple key, see if I can do this this way, a couple key things. One is the integration of a user interface that uses our services. The other is the different types of clients, recognizing the different types of clients that would integrate with us. There's a application layer and a security services layer. And within our application layer, it's broken down into functional services. We also have a mechanism to communicate with databases, which became important as well. We also integrate with other services at the CDC that provide additional services that we didn't have to create because they already existed, like a directory service. We utilize an existing secure data network instead of creating our own window into the CDC. So it's meant to be complex to show the different pieces that we were able to integrate with that were already existing. So since we mentioned services-oriented architecture in the title, I thought I'd kind of throw a what is SOA slide here. SOA, also services-oriented architecture, is functionality built into these interoperable parts. And the idea is use which services you need, don't use, make them small enough, direct enough that you can use them independently, but that you can also package them together. They're abstracted, they're autonomous, they can work on their own, you can reuse them, and they can be stateless, which means you connect to them now, you connect them again in 2 seconds, it's as if you hadn't done that before, so that it doesn't require you to continue connecting with it. It's the basis for integration for many platforms, and the capabilities then can be distributed. So if you use like a grid technology and stuff like that, it doesn't all need to be in the same place. It's standards compliant, and it uses, you know, some of the buzzwords that we're all familiar with. And in my project, we use SOAP and SOAP RPC. It's accessible over standard internet protocol, and it can be wrapped around existing legacy systems. Back to a solution. So back to the STARS project that I worked on. We decided on web services as our transport. And I said in my lessons learned a couple minutes ago that it wasn't necessarily the best decision, because it was actually kind of complex. We used SOAP RPC, which is like having a computer interface API. So it's like integrating directly with somebody else's program, and you really need to know exactly which order to call things and what information needs to be required, and it was complex. And we ended kind of like the model we talked about before, where it was built and documented so that our services were publicized, and you could consume that, and the documentation was there, and that you could integrate by yourself. But what we found is the easiest way was for our team to work with the integrating partner to integrate, which is not necessarily what you want, because you want to have something that's real easy to use so that people can integrate on their own and just ask you when they have questions. And we used XML as an industry standard. We had looked at basically forming our services around the HL7 segments, and at the time and still today, there were missing pieces. So we wanted to make sure that we were able to do functionality that went above and beyond what the HL7 scope was. So we did use standards like HL7, LOINC, and others in the development of our data models, though. So it makes it easy later to map to those type of messages. For vocabulary, we haven't achieved this yet. We have within our project a simple, though when you look at it, it would say complex, vocabulary system. But again, the solution would be to build a system at an enterprise level that multiple systems can use to manage the vocabulary, that there would be an authoring tool, a way to track the terms description, the coded element, meaning that there's a unique ID assigned to that, so that we're always talking about that piece of vocabulary in that time frame from that system. I've worked with other systems that have actually utilized a vocabulary committee. So new requests come in and they have to be approved to make sure it really is a new request. And it's not just that somebody missed a vocabulary that already existed. It could be that the new request ends up being apply a synonym to an existing coded element. And publish vocabulary standards for a particular organization. So make sure that those are published. This diagram shows you, and this is a diagram from last year. So this is actually being updated and things like that. But just to give you an idea, I thought it was a good slide and good diagram to show how services could be broken up into functional areas. So here's an example of a service bus, a little bit different than a grid. A grid is more for distributed systems and different systems offering different services. A service bus normally would be the services in kind of one place and one nice package, and you could use whichever you want with a predefined kind of way to get in. And this shows how we were able to take laboratory services and break it up into individual, reusable, autonomous parts. So identifying those services helps you build the infrastructure. So in accessioning services to to give identifiers and help track identifiers and map identifiers and link identifiers to different systems, a vocabulary service to help with validation, registration, your ontology, a data message brokering service, your translation, your transformation. How do you take one message from one type of system that might be sending in messages via HL7 and bring that to a common platform? Your directory services, the individual or the organization sending, do they have a certificate that we can track back to? Are we sure that it's really coming from who it's coming from? Results reporting services, how do we create those reports, those results, and send them back out? Tracking, the lineage, the aliquots, where did it all come from? Where did the parent specimen come from? Chain of custody, kind of the package itself, the individuals, where it was shipped, what courier did we use, status of notification, and the list can just go on and on. The web interface that we developed was Luna. Luna is a web interface to STARS. Luna uses all of the web services that we built for STARS. It is not using some backdoor or anything else like that. It is an example of how an application can integrate with our services-oriented architecture. What it had become was something that we put together for planned obsolescence. In other words, we created something that we hope goes away. But in the meanwhile, in the however many years it takes for everyone to be integrated, there is a way to access the data. Universal accessibility. So let's say your system can access the data, but you're not in front of your system right now. Or you happen to be one of those people in the lab that don't need a LIMS interface but can access this. Or any number of things. This provides, because it's over HTTP, internet browser, that universal accessibility. It says, I don't need to be at a certain place, on a certain system, with my secure data network digital certificate, I can access this. Instant integration. So a lab is interested in integrating with our services-oriented architecture, and we add them to the activity and turn them on tomorrow. Now you're using Luna, and now you're integrated with the services-oriented architecture. And web services testbed. So it was a way for us to, when we add new functionality, to implement it in a testbed that we controlled. Support services. These are the type of services that are non-domain specific and become some of the things that people might forget. Security modules, we have one for authentication. So who are you? What is your password, and authorization. So even if you can log in and we know who you are you able to request patient data? No. You know, are you, or maybe yes, you know, that's controlled by authorization. And we do it in a way called profiles, where you may be you, but you are a different you depending on which lab you're in. So you may have someone that works multiple labs, and in one lab they may have the rights to do some QA/QC, in another lab, they may not. So we're able to control that on a profile basis. Auditing, who did what and when? And being able to go back that something happened and say who touched what record, who saw what record, and what change they make, and even reverting those changes back. User administration and preferences, what are the tools for those who are managing? And that's another reason for our web interface. We built all of our system administration tools into that. Notification, in terms of we notify for several things, we use email notification and our web services trigger that. And some simple vocabulary management, which turns out to be not too simple. So the benefits, if you were to get past all the business pieces and integrate new vocabulary and everything and prove in advance with a model that you were going to save some money by implementing an integrated system, the benefit of using services-oriented architecture to achieve that is you have lower developmental costs, lower project risks, because you're hopefully reusing existing efforts. And whether those efforts are yours or something that somebody else did or something that maybe the CDC is doing, or what have you, the costs are lower because these pieces can be reused. It's the mantra of integrate once and use only the services you need. So if there's a new outbreak with some new system, You're already integrated, and now we add that new service to your list of services that you can consume with the instructions of what's required, what's not, and how you use the service. So the idea would be we're all integrated for everything. H1N1, we add this new component, and now we can use that service immediately. Can handle single point of integration for multiple applications. So now we may have a system where we have a system that does vocabulary and one that does directory and one that does a lab, and now we're going to add one that does something to do with, I don't know, but that same idea that you can integrate to this architecture, and we can add different systems on the back, so we can add systems without really impacting the integration. And ability to use existing applications, and that was one of the requirements when we started, was that the CDC did not want people to have to use a brand new system in order to integrate with STARS, our project. So part of using web services is that if you have a LIMS or something like that, that we can integrate you with this architecture, even if it means doing some alternative ways of integration, like staging tables or using an integration broker in the middle. It's secure, it's auditable, because each transaction is really a message, and as long as you want to store those transactions, there's a way to do that. You can secure it as much as you want. You can encrypt the message, you can do encryption, you can require that the authorization certificate is attached in the message envelope so we validate the user each time. There's just ways to go from zero to everything you want within that. And the changes can be made to underlying application without affecting integration. So we can come out with STARS 2.0 or whatever, and as long as we keep the interface, saying that we may add new fields, but we maintain that backwards compatibility, so that now you can use XYZ, or that now this message can also take this, but your interface doesn't change. So in conclusion, there are several different integration solutions that will throw out the SOA buzzword. And that is actually great, because there are several of different needs, and it depends on the need. You know, are your systems and your user and your information, are those disparate, or are they all in the same place? What about your user base? What about your level of security that you're looking for? What is your level of computing power that you need? So that is all, and it's great that there's that many, because there's that many needs. And service-oriented architecture has many benefits. Integration, though, is a lot more than just implementing SOA, picking a transport mechanism, and saying, let's go. It is also as much a business process as it is a political process. So even if you could all agree on vocabulary and data element, can you force somebody to use something? Can you force them to spend their own money to integrate with you? So it becomes a handshake, a business process, an investment that when you're talking integration, and that's why I'd asked about those organizations and where they're already talking with each other, because when you're talking about integration, it ends up impacting not just the organization that pays for the architecture to be developed, but all of those systems that then need to integrate. And what you hope is that beyond the net effects of that you saw on your charts, besides those net effects, that there's some immediate benefit to the organizations that are paying to do the integration, because their time is going to be used in a large portion of that. And we've seen benefits of especially where organizations are already talking to each other. They're already integrated with a system. That system just happens to be a fax machine, a piece of paper, and a FedEx box. But that is still a system, and that is still an integration point. What we're doing is we're introducing efficiencies, we're introducing reduced errors, we're introducing a way to save money because there's no additional data entry, a way to do better tracking, to have better security, and different things like that. So that's important as these handshakes are made. So that concludes my presentation. I guess I had one more slide. I don't know how that ended up there. That was supposed to be before the conclusion. So we'll continue the conclusion with, don't subscribe to that whole thing as build it and they will come. Make sure you have buy-in, support, policy, whatever that is that says, if we spend this money, it will be used. Don't underestimate the importance of vocabulary integration. Define an interim solution, like that web interface that we said, because it's going to take a long time. And if people start seeing the benefits immediately, then they're just more inclined to get to that end state. Develop your support services first, because then as soon as you're done with your first functional service, then people can start using it. Iterative development becomes the way to go here. If you wait till you're done with everything, then the technology is going to be old and people will get upset. So, as, you know, start small, add your first service, add another service, and that's, again, one of the benefits we said of SOA. Don't reinvent the wheel, especially now within the open source community, within other states, within the CDC. Most likely, someone has already done a lot of these functional services. So look for where, or had already come up with common data models, or have already done some of the vocabulary normalization. So look for where that already exists. Involve your users and stakeholders, not just in the beginning, but throughout the entire process. And keep it simple. An integration that's too complex will have many other problems later. You'll be spending money on trying to market and try and get people to use it, as opposed to a simple interface that people jump at the chance of using. So that concludes my presentation. Does anyone have any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that you had a committee around that. So I assume only an expert is present in that committee.
Correct.
But is there an informaticist involved in helping drive that process and bring the data into some sort of sensible format?
And I would say now there is. And I've seen the evolution of vocabulary. So when we first started, it was kind of a single-driven point of, you know, here's the vocabulary and you guys map it out type of thing. What we see now, and you go to many sessions, is you'll see that, yes, the SMEs are involved, there's process around it, there's communities of practice, there's informaticists involved. The involvement is there. It's just we had built the system years before the process started. Had the process started at the same time while we were building the infrastructure, then we wouldn't be waiting for the vocabulary. And I think that was the point I intended to make, is that that is an important thing to start in the beginning and then kind of build towards that. All right, thank you.